Welcome back, everybody. I'm Doug Flutie. This is the Flutie Flakes cast. Thanks for joining me and sticking with us. Really fun weekend. The number one thing that I want to talk, I was so anxious, and I mentioned it last week, was the national championship game, Georgia Bulldogs, Alabama, Saban going for number eight, Georgia needing their first in 40 years since Herschel Walker days, and Stetson Bennett, the walk-on that's become a scholarship leader of the team and a quarterback that was running for a national championship. I love his story. I'm so happy for him and Georgia for their win. I mean, Saban, absolutely amazing job at Alabama this year. Eight guys in the top rounds and lose everybody, rekindle, fire it back up, do it again. Bryce Young becomes a Heisman Trophy winner. They're struggling early in the year. They lose a game. They come back at the end to tie and then beat Auburn and manage to get to the playoffs again. But he just reloads and he keeps going. And they lose both top wide receivers. They lose both their corners. And it's still a competitive game down to the wire. But as far as Georgia and Stetson Bennett, you could see the emotion in his face at the end of the game when the ball was intercepted at the end and he ended up running it back for a touchdown to make it a two-score game and really ice the victory. He just started tearing up and you could see the emotion in him. You knew how important it was for Stetson. And he's been viewed as a game manager. He's been viewed as a guy that, just don't go lose the game for us, hand the ball off, run the show, work the clock, whatever you're doing. In the last 2 weeks in the national championship game and in the playoff game, he made some plays. He made plays against Michigan on the move, avoiding blitzes, throwing the ball down the field, getting lit up, a couple of big plays down the field, as well as showing his athleticism, getting out of pocket and running. And this week, after having a costly turnover, which was a very marginal call, they reviewed it, they overturned it, it becomes a fumble, sets Alabama up. He bounces right back, stands in there, verse blitz, little shift to avoid a little lean to the left to buy a fraction of a second, and turns it loose and hits a big play down the field. Now, he's not the reason they won the game. He made his plays. He did well. But the reason Georgia won the game was their defense. And the difference in this game from the SEC championship was defense got after it. They blitz. And I've said it all my life. If you have a mobile quarterback, if you have a guy that can burn you with his legs and is a top-notch, you've got to pressure him. The only way to beat people is get people in their face. I go back to, and Coach Tom Coughlin is my guest this week. I go back to the Super Bowl that the Giants beat an undefeated Patriots team. The reason they won that game was pass rush. They got to the quarterback. They did it with a four-man rush, and they hit Tom, and they hit him a lot. And that was what had to happen for Georgia. In their SEC championship game, they sat back. They went four-man rush, didn't get to the quarterback, changed the game plan. Kirby Smart, a big moment for him, a big coaching success, a move to put pressure on the quarterback, got there. They have studs. I mean, their front seven is ridiculous. They're the only front seven that's better than Alabama's front seven defensively, and just got after the quarterback. A tip of the hat to Bryce Young. Bryce Young got hit, got sacked, got beat up the entire game, kept fighting, kept his team in it, and he was the only reason Alabama was in the position they were. But congratulations to Kirby Smart. Congratulations to Stetson Bennett, all the Georgia Bulldogs out there. Phenomenal, phenomenal win. I look back at the NFL weekend, and it's funny because for the national championship game, Mike Tirico and I were going to do this pregame thing for the national championship game, and our guest was going to be Trevor Lawrence. So Trevor couldn't make the rehearsal, so we're just talking through the script of things we're going to talk about. And jokingly, Tirico says to a fake Trevor Lawrence, "Congratulations on the big win over Indy. You had a great game. Way to finish the season strong, blah, blah, blah. Now we just need a tie game on Sunday night and everything's off and running." And sure enough, it all plays out that way. It's amazing. Trevor Lawrence has a high snap on a play to win the game and scrambles to the right on fourth down, puts a beautiful ball, great catch, feeder in, touchdown, Jacksonville wins. And then the overtime game. And this is something I mentioned in my interview with Coach Coughlin a little bit about overanalyzing games and people that sometimes you got to trust players. Sometimes you got to put the ball in the player's hands and quit looking at the analytics. Take the play sheet, rip it up, throw it over there, and let's just go play football. A fourth and two in his own end, deciding to be aggressive. I know Staley has been aggressive all year long, but sometimes you just got to look at the situation, know you're on the road, know it's a loud stadium. Maybe we're not going to get off the line of scrimmage strong. Punt the ball away in the third quarter. in a 3-point game. It just is amazing that the entire season comes down to the last game of the year, goes to overtime, down to the last seconds of the overtime, and three teams are looking at their playoff destiny. And the fourth quarter drive, the end of the game drive, Justin Herbert, I'll tell you what, I am a fan. I haven't seen a lot of him this year. What he did was absolutely amazing. First down through third down, that offense looked like they could not get a yard. The Chargers were struggling. They had to go to the length of the field to score, converted on fourth down four different times. And it was always fourth and 12, fourth and 10, fourth and 8, fourth and whatever. The final play of the game, you know it's the last play, and you've got to score a touchdown. I was talking with Trevor Lawrence about this, about what you do. And to me, it looked like the receiver was bracketed. So there's a man on the inside and a man on the outside of him. So all you can do in those situations is attack one of the defenders and then turn to the opposite side and hope for the throw. And there's a tight window. And what he did was take it up hard, split the defenders, went at the outside defender like he might go for the, and then snap hooked it. The anticipation of that throw, Herbert drifts to his left. And before he snaps around that head, as he starts to move towards the one or two steps, he turned it loose. And the window of opportunity to get it in there, both DBs put their feet in the ground and dove for the ball, both missing it by a fraction of an inch. Ball splits the defenders, caught for the touchdown. They go to overtime. Now, you're talking overtime, and Coach Coughlin and I talk about this in our interview. What do you do? You've got your quest in the NFL is to make the playoffs. If you are running the show, it's your team, your career, your livelihood is on the line. You want to be a playoff team. You're going to lose your job as a, whatever your job may be at home. You're going to lose your job if you don't make the playoffs here. Do you line up and kick a field goal to win the game and move up a spot? Or if you kneel down, you've got the same scenario. You go to the playoffs. If you kick the field goal, you are a success. If you get it blocked and it goes the other way, you may get fired. You're a total failure. What do you do? Do you take the safe way out? And Coach Coughlin laid it out pretty nice to me in that this is the NFL. It's competitiveness. You win. You play to win, and that's how you play the game. And I agree with that. But in the moment, I was thinking, this is crazy. Don't even line up. Don't even line up and kick this thing. Because I go way back to the days in the 70s of Joe Pisarcik turning around to hand off to Larry Zonka, fumbling the ball. It's scoop and scored by the Eagles. I believe it put the Eagles into the playoffs on the, instead of kneeling down. And that's why that particular play is why everybody in the NFL kneels down. And there's a reason in the NFL. And I equate kicking that field goal. I equate kicking it to, do you kneel down at the end of the game or do you hand the ball off and let him get tackled, right? You kneel down. It's obvious now. And it's just taking that minimal risk that is unnecessary because you are going to be in the playoffs. Now, if you really legitimately think, okay, we're going to have to get, we could get a better seed and play a different team, then that's a legit thought process. I really felt like the Raiders were in the mode to just let the clock run out and go to the playoffs. And the timeout definitely in my mind is what, and I still ran the ball, but it was more aggressive. I really felt like the backs were just kind of covering up the ball and running at that point and watching the clock, letting the clock tick down. So it was a very unique situation that's never, I've never seen that occur in the NFL. The only thing there was one way, way back. I was a Baltimore Colts fan as a little kid. The Colts were in the playoffs, secure spot, playing the Detroit Lions who were out of the playoffs. And on the last play of the game, they could have just walked out of the end zone for a safety, but instead they decide to punt. And they punted the ball. It got blocked. Lions fall on it for a touchdown, which didn't affect the Colts at all. But what it did was, I believe, knocked the Miami Dolphins out of the playoffs and put somebody else in that year. And I just kind of equate what could have happened to that time and place. I get the chance today to talk to Tom Coughlin, a guy that set my career on its path, that coached me through college and had an amazing coaching career of his own. And remember, you can get the Flutie Flakes cast on Apple, Pandora, and Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to rate and review. Everybody knows him as a Super Bowl winning head coach, Tom Coughlin, with the Giants, and all he's done in his career as a head coach. And every time I start to talk to coach. And of course, I'm 59 years old and it's still coach to me because Tom Coughlin was my offensive coordinator back in Boston College. I'm an 18-year-old kid. I still, when I get near Coach Coughlin, it's sitting up straight, books open, ready to go, feet on the floor. You're in the meeting room 5 minutes before, Ed, you better be ready to rock. I was the most disciplined I've ever been in my life, the 3 years that I was under Coach Tom Coughlin. And I'm so thankful for that. It set me on a path in my career. It's just a joy to see you, Coach. And how's everything going?
It's always great to see you, Doug. And I have to tell all the stories too, if you're going to start down that line. I'm at Syracuse, coaching at Syracuse. You know, I'm an assistant coach and the head coach resigns. Now I'm crushed. You know, I'm 50 miles from my hometown and I've never been anywhere else. So all of a sudden, and I'm not that well known either. You know, it was kind of up and down when I was there. So along comes Jack McNeil. I go to Boston College. I interview. Bye-bye. Jack offers me the job. Okay. I played against Boston College all the time. I was, at Syracuse. So I go to Boston College and, and it turns out to be the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life, because all I have to say to people is I coach Doug Flutie. That's it. I don't have to say another word. They get it. You know, they get it. And the whole deal, I've never had so much fun in my life as I did coaching you, Doug, because there was nothing you couldn't do. I remember Jackie Sherrill walking across the field one day after a game when Marino was there, remember? And he said, did he throw the ball behind his back? I said, yep, he threw it behind his back. So, I mean, it was just, and you'll know about this too. But one time, I'm being hard ass on you and I've got you, you got to take this step and you got to do that. And where's the ball and where are your eyes? What are you looking? And Jack goes by and he says, don't coach that concept out of this guy. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I tell the story always about, we're down at Penn State. We're getting our butts kicked. So we put this freshman quarterback in the game at the end. He goes up and down the field. We score twice. He hits a deep ball on the sideline, the whole deal. We come back and Jack comes in the meeting room the next day and he's all flustered a little bit. He says, what are we going to do? We got these three seniors and we got this, this young player. And I looked at him and I said, coach, we're going to play the young guy. And that was it. That was it. But then I still think, remember going to Texas A&M your sophomore year? We go down there, 97 degrees. And it was the first time we instituted the naked stuff.
Yes.
So we're on the plus 25 or wherever we are. We run toss naked with you. You're in the end zone. They don't even know you got the ball in the end zone. I mean, it was more fun. And we played, the way Bill Flynn was, we played everybody. We went everywhere. You remember, we go to Clemson and tie the national championship Clemson team. And the fans from Clemson are waiting for us by the bus to get a standing ovation from them. And Jack has everybody sit down and watch the rock so that they can tell their kids about touching the rock when they come down. I mean, it's a classic.
The whole thing, we were too stupid and naive to understand what we were doing. And Steve Strahan, one of our tailbacks back then, when we went to Clemson, he's like grabbing handfuls of grass and sticking it in a baggie and taking it home with us. This was all new to us. We were just having fun. And I think that's why we played well. We didn't know any better.
Yeah, well, you did. That's it. That's why you played well. You just had a lot of fun playing the game and it just grew and grew and grew. I mean, people don't even know. You're playing pro football and I'm the head coach of Boston College. I look up one day and you got your ice skates with you. And I said, what are you doing? I'm playing intramural hockey. I mean, how do you play intramural hockey as your break?
Coach, I just had I'm 59 years old. I had a hockey game last night.
Did you really? Honest to God. But they all understand it's the truth. I mean, you went one-on-one with, what was that guard's name?
Michael Adams.
Michael Adams. You played him one-on-one. You dunked the basketball. You could have been the shortstop on the baseball team without a doubt. I mean, it's amazing the things that the athletic ability, but everything was around your attitude. And your attitude was always exactly the same. You had a big smile on your face. You were like a sponge. You wanted to learn everything you could possibly learn. You couldn't wait to compete. And it showed. I mean, it just showed. And it's infectious. And you know what happens when a guy plays like that? And I'll just use the analogy, it's like Brady. When they go to play with Brady, the game gets elevated for everybody because they have to play at your level. If they don't play or at least give the great effort at your level, they're going to look really bad. So, and that's the effect that you had on people. Even as a collegiate, you had that effect. Not to say anything about, you know, your pro career.
Well, I appreciate that, Coach. And it was a fun run. You know, I would have loved to have been in one city and played and just had that opportunity to continue to build an offense, you know, the bouncing around thing and all that. And
yeah,
my years in Canada felt like I played when we were at Boston College together. But you took off. Yeah, let's just jump ahead. I mean, you took off and everybody knew. We had a coaching staff that actually, when I was in college, that was a lot of fun and allowed me to blossom. I always said that I had you during the week to build the disciplines, I learned more football, and I've said this a million times, more football from you than my rest of the year combined, as far as reading fronts, reading coverage, getting in and out of plays, all that kind of stuff. So you leave the staff, you head to the NFL, and everybody knew you were off to greatness. I reminisce through, I guess, being a New England guy, you know, your Super Bowl wins and some of the great moments and highlights for you.
Well, obviously, anytime you get to have an opportunity to be a world champion, it's a wonderful thing. But to me, it's the journey along the way. And I remember all kinds of stuff which set us up. The big thing about the Super Bowl 42 win was in week 17, we played the Patriots in New York, you know, and here comes a team that's undefeated. I mean, they got a shot at an undefeated season, and we're 10-6. We're in, you know, we're in the playoffs. So the media starts on me right away about, you're not going to play everybody, are you? And we played them on a Saturday, and I'll never forget thinking about that. And I decided there's no way the New York Giant franchise is going to go down in history as a team that didn't put their best foot forward against the team that had a chance to be undefeated. So we played, and I lost the center for a week. I lost one of my linebackers for a week in doing it. So it doesn't go without it. And I basically got my butt ripped for doing it. But it's 38-35. We're leading in the fourth quarter. You know, Eli has a big game. We're playing very, very well. They came back and beat us, but they knew they were in a game. And we knew walking off the field that, you know, we could play with them. And that was where this thing, the whole thing started for our team. And, you know, in terms of feeling good, we went the last 3 weeks of the regular season, we had to win one game to get in the playoffs. And Washington came into town and beat us with a backup quarterback. And everybody expected to get their ass ripped from me. When I walked in the next morning, I walked in and I said, gentlemen, we just lost an opportunity, obviously, to secure a position in the playoffs. I would hope that we would put all our energies into going to Buffalo this weekend. Yeah, we got to win against Buffalo in order to get in the playoffs. We don't beat Buffalo Bills. We are going to have to beat the New England Patriots, who are coming into our stadium as undefeated and the greatest offense in the history of the National Football League, all that stuff. And the players are all looking around like, wow, they're ready to get their butts chewed for not beating the Redskins in the division, you know, and wrapping it up. So anyway, that's how it started. It long. And all the experts on Fox, not one game did they pick us to win. We went to Tampa and we won. We went to Dallas. Dallas had beaten us twice. We went to Dallas and won. Went to Green Bay in the minus 27 degree weather and beat Green Bay, you know. And then, of course, played the Patriots in the Super Bowl game, which was a completely different kind of game, you know, a 17-14 game rather than 38-35. I remember coming out of the going out onto the field from the locker room. I look up in the stands and one of the Giants fans has got a placard up and it says 18-1. So I chuckled. I just chuckled about that when I was walking across the field. But it was a great game. There was a great finish and all of that. And all the emotions come out. And the thing that I told the players the night before was, you know, when you become the world champion, everybody, your family, your wife, your parents, your siblings, they are all world champions. And that's the essence of being the best in your profession and being on top of the mountain. It doesn't last long, you know, as you well know, but you're the best at your profession. And it's a great feeling and source of pride. It's not having children and all of that stuff that goes with being a family, but it is a huge, huge feeling about that. As a matter of fact, in 90, when I was with the Giants as an assistant and we won, that's when I came to Boston College as the head coach. right off a Super Bowl win. And what a, you know, what a fabulous way that is to start your career, you know, as a college head coach is to come into that situation. So, you know, it's all about the thing that you've always had. And I got to interject this here right now. You beat us when I was in Jacksonville, you beat us in Buffalo. And this is something people don't remember, but Thurman Thomas screwed the play up. And I don't know whether you checked it at the line of scrimmage or what you did, but you, as you always did, instinctively, you knew what to do. It was not a naked. It was a screwed up running play that you turned and ran in the end zone to beat us in Buffalo that on that particular day. So, I mean, that's the instinctive part of the game that I think Jack was referring to.
Yeah, I always felt, for me, I played my best when I could be instinctive and not overthink. And that's why I talked about it. I did a lot of pregame stuff for the national championship game. Why the preparation end is so important, because it's got to get to the point where when you're on the field, it's just a natural instinctive reaction to do what you're supposed to do. And that particular play was a check with me. It was either toss, crack, or dive. I checked to the toss crack. Thurman didn't hear it. He ran the dive. So I just ran it myself and got around the corner and
won the game. And you won the game with that play. And I got to walk off the field with you just beating me in Buffalo.
Yeah. You brought it up. And I've talked to a lot of my old CFL guys and stuff like that. And we always talk about one cold weather game. And you brought up the Green Bay game. New England and Buffalo played a game where New England threw the ball three times because of weather. What was the situation in your championship game there with Green Bay?
Well, the first thing that happened was we all knew it was cold. We checked into a hotel the night before. I forget where the little town was down the road in Green Bay. And the wind was coming through the windows, you know, whistling and howling. And it was cold. So we get to the stadium and I figure I'll do what I always do. For pregame, not going to be a problem. You know, put a ball cap on, no gloves, no nothing on my ears. I was out there about 5 seconds, and I said, how the hell am I going to get back in the locker room before my ears fall off here? But it was that cold. But you know what? The mental part of the game, and at that point in time, our team was pretty mentally tough. So our linemen come out, you know, shirtless, like you're supposed to play the game. Eli threw the ball like it was 75 degrees, and Plaxico Burress made, I think, 11 catches in the game. You know, they played like the weather was not even a factor. Whereas before, when the game was going into overtime, I looked across the field and Brett Favre was over there in the cape, you know, kind of like this. And, you know, and the first play of the overtime, he threw a pick. So, I mean, it was miserable cold, but the first half, everybody was cold and everybody was worried about my face, which was beet red. But in the second half, I honestly didn't even have a problem with the cold. So whatever, for whatever it is, but obviously the way you know it, the Lawrence Tynes kicks a game-winning field goal. The ball is hard as a rock and nothing is the same. The ball's hard. How do you kick a ball that's like a rock? And he would have made it from 55 in that particular kick. And that was a 47-yarder to win to put us in the Super Bowl.
I look at what's going on in the NFL now. You see it worse in baseball, where they have all these analytics. And you're an analytic type guy and an X and O guy. And I just I see games like that. I see games like the Buffalo New England game, where you've got to take the situation at hand and then start coaching. Right? I mean, we've all got the play sheet. But don't you come down to a gut feel of this guy's making plays for me, or this is the situation, this is when I have to go for it?
Absolutely. You get started, you know, you might have 15 to start the game and you try to stay with it, but sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. But you're right. When you're out on the field, who can tell you what the wind is like? The game we beat Buffalo, it was 40-mile-an-hour winds and both teams scored in only one direction, and that was with the wind at our back. So, I mean, you could take the play sheet and throw it out the window. They were up on us by 14-0 at the time. But the game itself has to be played. The one that always gets me, Doug, and you've seen it, and I'll just be on that briefly. But, you know, this idea about going for two in the first quarter. Are you serious? I don't care what analytic whatever came up with that one. But you save that. You save that. You get points all along. You may need the two-point conversion, but you don't get it at the wrong time of the game. You don't want to take points off the board. You don't do it.
I totally agree. It's like, and those 2-point plays are precious. The ones that you know, you've got three or four go-tos that this is, you know, game is on the line, whether it's fourth and two or a 2-point play. I roll my eyes and I do it more in baseball. I would bat. Well, they would never play an overshift to me because I can't hit the ball anyway. But these big power hitters get up and they just got everyone. Just push a ball. I bet it 850. Yeah. I bet 900. Push up on. Yes. I'm over there. Next guy up. Let's go. And sometimes you got to take what they give you or just read the situation. I say this because I go back. Did you see the Raiders game at all with the last second?
I watched it up to a point. I did see the overtime. They, you know, the next day they showed the overtime, but.
What was your take on whether you try to kick that field goal, whether you try to get a first down? Are you playing? You get the ball. Let's say you get the ball with a minute to go and a tie gets you to the playoffs. What's your approach?
I'm going to win the game, but if it comes down to it, I'll kick the field goal. You know, I mean, I think that same thing went through people's minds. It did validify the game of professional football when they kicked the field goal to win. I mean, both teams go in and, you know, there's a lot of argument out there about, yeah, they both should have gone, you know, that type of thing. It's the nature of the beast. You always play to win. You play to win. I'm sure you've heard this story, but the game you're talking to me about, and I mentioned the game against New England as the 17th week of the season. I came into my office the next morning, Sunday morning, 5:00 in the morning, the lights on in my phone. It's John Madden. And John Madden is telling me, Tom, I wanted to call and congratulate you and your team on not just a good effort, but a great effort, you know, and to play the game to win. We play to win in this league. We're not worried about, you know, playing our players, and the game is about competition and doing your best. And that's what this game is all, blah, blah, blah. But that kind of an attitude is the attitude that I would take as well.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I'd go back to, I was playing a preseason game in Calgary and it was against what was a rival for us in Edmonton. And I refused to come out of the game. I played the overtime and everything. I played the whole game in the overtime. It was a preseason game. It's like, no, we're winning this thing. And I agree. That's the flip side of that is you look at the Joe Pisarczyk play and why everybody kneels down at the end of the game now and securing a win. And I just, if that field goal had gotten blocked and gone back the other way.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I love that they kept showing, there was one Pittsburgh Steeler fan wearing a jersey in the stands that, you know, anything but a tie and he's happy. And he was miserable the entire fourth quarter in overtime. I don't know how many people, we talk about Super Bowl championships, coaching career. I looked at you as this technical Tom, the analytic guy in our room and teaching me and all. You played in a backfield at Syracuse. You played football at Syracuse. What was your role in that backfield and who were you with?
Well, obviously Larry Zonka and Floyd Little were the two backs. Zonka asked me this a couple weeks ago. He said, why did you go to Syracuse? You could run the ball. Why wouldn't you go someplace where you could have played tailback? When I grew up 50 miles from Syracuse, and I'm watching the Ben Schwartzwalder show since I was in the sixth or seventh grade, and I just always wanted to go to Syracuse. But to get on the field at Syracuse, I had to become a blocker. I didn't block anybody in high school. I, you know, 20 touchdowns one year, 16 another year as a running back. And to get on the field, yeah, show me how to get on the field. So I became a blocker. We were an unbalanced line. And I played the halfback position, the wingback position. I ran the scissors, caught the ball, and played, you know, just and blocked. But that's how I got on the field. But you got two Hall of Famers. Floyd, God bless his soul. What a great, great human being Floyd Little was, they'd be at the Hall of Fame, and he'd have Zonka and Jim Brown, and they'd be in their gold jackets. And he'd always text me or send me a picture, just kind of sticking it right. Here we are.
Here we are,
buddy. How you
One
doing
of these
there?
Things is not like the other, where you'll have your gold jacket with the Hall of Fame, with coaching. Your USO trip. How about that? At Saddam Hussein's palace, you stayed over there and that. What was that like?
Those are great stories there now. But we have to stop a minute, because the reason I went to visit and to spend time in Iraq with the soldiers was because of General Odierno. General Odierno passed away But what a great guy. And he's a Giants fan. He's from New Jersey. So I got to know him very, very well. And he invited me, first of all, to come to Iraq. He was the unilateral general in charge of all forces in Iraq. And General O was a big, big deal now. So I was going to go, but then we made it into a USO trip. We took, you know, we took five coaches, Cower and Fisher and John Gruden and John Harbaugh. All five of us went. But the funny thing was, because Joe Biden, as the vice president, was coming in, the palace that we stayed in, all five of us had to stay in one room so Joe could have this great big bedroom. Now, President Biden, God bless him, he's a good guy. So he gets in there, we're talking football now, and it's, you know, we just had a great time. But on the 4th of July, General Odierno and Vice President Biden made great speeches to 257 soldiers who were receiving their citizenship as United States citizens. Imagine fighting a war for a country and not even being a citizen. That was the cream of the day for me, but it was a great experience. And I told President Bush, after we had come back, that the morale was amazing to me, the soldiers and their morale, but the status of the country. And, you know, I mean, we got in a sandstorm and we didn't even think we were going to get out of it. We didn't think we'd make it back on time. We went through Kuwait, and when we stayed in a hotel in Kuwait, we saw the pictures of that was the place that was bombed by Saddam Hussein when he started the war. So it was a great experience. But let me tell you how it sets in. So we land in Kuwait and we're going to fly then into Baghdad. We're flying into Baghdad on military planes, and about 15 minutes out, they shut the lights out on the plane. And you kind of look at each other like, oh, ho, you know, well, this is kind of serious, isn't it? You know, but it was a great experience. Had a marvelous time, you know, had a great time with General Odierno, flew all over the place. Went up north with him, 115 degrees on the tarmac when we land a plane in Iraq. Yeah, just an incredible experience. We land, the place has been bombed the day before. You know, here we are, and here's the big guy. So this is a story I always tell. So we get out of this plane, and we're in the, what's the name of the town in northern Iraq? And anyway, it was an action-packed spot. So they had They pulled out the SUVs on the tarmac for us to get in. And one of the guys in charge of the trip, a captain, said, Coach, why don't you go with the general? So I said, okay, great. So I jump in the car with the general. I'm sitting there. I look at the general and it hits me. If anybody's going to bomb somebody, it's going to be the car that the general's in. And I'm in that car, you know? So, yeah, lots of great...
If there was a target out here, I just like put my arm around the target and said, shoot.
I just put it on my back. Yeah.
Oh, great. My goodness. Yeah. There's like 100 things I'd love to get in. One last topic, and we'll get a little bit serious. Yeah. A lot of head coaches. There's a carousel every year. Things go on. I would love to work with kids and coach and have fun at it. But the job, the moving from town to town, the insecurity of it, what is the process like as a coach? Well, let's go from the other side of hiring a new head coach now. What's the process for teams?
Obviously, the process is if there's a general manager in place, he usually heads it up. The owner is very much involved, and they choose who they would like to interview as a first round, you know, and then you do go through this process. But it's different in different franchises because, quite frankly, you have a lot of businessmen who are now owners in the National Football League that are not football background guys. So they lean heavily on, they might hire an outside group to recommend people. They might have a list of names put together by the general manager. But they go through this whole process. And, you know, you're never sure as a guy who's interviewing, what is the hot button? You know, what is it that I'm going to say that's going to, you know, to make them more interested in me than anybody else? Because they've got the world to choose from, obviously. I remember when I went to Jacksonville, I was a head coach at Boston College. I had no plans of going anywhere. We had just won a bowl game. We're back. You know, the staff was intact except for a couple of guys who were moving on, you know, et cetera. And I get this phone call from a guy by the name of David Seldon. And one of my players had come by earlier in the day and said that, "Coach, I'm trying to get a job. Would you mind accepting a phone call and recommending me for the job?" And I said, "Sure, just have him call me." So when the phone call came, it was from the Jaguars. I didn't even know who the Jaguars were. I took the phone call and I said, "Okay, who is David Seldon? I'm the president of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We were just entered the National Football League as the newest franchise." And I thought, "Okay, great." And I still to this day thought it was somebody calling about my player. And he asked me if I would be interested in talking about the job. And I said, "Well, how many people do you have involved?" He said, "We have five." I said, "I'm not interested." He said, "You're not interested?" I said, "No, I'm not interested." He said, "Okay, can we call you back?" I said, "You can call me back anytime you want. But if you got five guys, I'm not interested in talking to you." So they called back a couple of weeks later and said, "There's two. Would you be interested if you were the second one of two?" And that's kind of the way these things go. You know, that's kind of the way things go. And I remember way back, Doug, when you were playing for Trump. Remember you came down to you came to South Jersey and had dinner with us and all the kids?
Yes.
Absolutely. You were the Pied Piper in that, what was it, a purple Porsche you had?
And you were maroon. It was a maroon Porsche.
And all the kids were out in the neighborhood waiting for you to get there. I'll never forget that.
A lot of fun. Those are and the USFL is coming back. There's more coaching positions and more player positions.
I see that. Yeah, I see that.
I think spring football has a shot because of TV. People love football. They watch college spring games on TV.
Oh, yeah.
It's like people buy tickets. They will watch good football if you put good football on the field. You're wearing your J-Fund shirt. Tell us a little about your foundation with the J-Fund.
I actually founded the J-Fund in Jacksonville in 1996. But the idea was when I was the head coach at Boston College in 1991, I had a strong safety by the name of Jay McGillis, who was a sophomore from Brockton, Mass, starting strong safety, tough kid, a great, great overachiever, quite frankly, but an attitude where he'd run through a wall. He would do anything that you wanted him to do. He was a great teammate. He was a good student. You know, I had that deal where I had the 6 o'clock run for anybody that missed a class, never missed a class, never, nothing. We came back from actually playing Syracuse in our 10th game, came back from Syracuse, and the trainer came to me and said, "Coach, you know, I don't think Jay's going to be able to play this week." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, he's got a little fever. He's got swollen glands and so on and so forth. Well, let's get him to the doctor and try to get him." Well, it wasn't that. It was leukemia. And it was a ravaging form of leukemia. And we lost Jay. It was 1991. And July 3rd of 1992, he was gone. And the impact that made on Judy and I in watching a family go through this as everybody stops working and runs to the bedside of the sick individual, the sick child, that made such an impact on me that we thought, Judy and I, that if we ever had a chance to give back, it would be we would give in the spirit and the name of Jay McGillis, but we would be helping families in a practical sense who had a child with cancer. So we started this in 1996. We're over 25 years old. We've helped over 5,000 families. We've donated and benefited the families by spending over $16 million, and we do it in a very practical way, Doug. We put roof over the head. We put food on the table. We turn the lights on. We provide gas to be able to get back and forth from the hospital. We feed you when you're in the hospital. We also have all kinds of days, which we call a day. We take a day off from cancer. And so when I was in New York, we called it the Sunday Blitz. They came to the offices, built them up, make them feel like players. We take them in the field house. We have some exercises for them, take them in the weight room, have players in there showing them the lifts and all of that, take them to the training room, tape them up, you know, that kind of stuff, and then go down and have an ice cream sundae down at the cafeteria. So we would do days like this, all kinds of days. You know, we have parties, we have holiday parties, we have just all kinds of things. We had 96 events a year ago from, you know, we're located in Jacksonville and in New York, New Jersey. So, but our job, there are those who have do research, and God bless them. That's important. There's no doubt about it. But we're there to take the stress off of the family when the parents hear that word, "Oh my God, my child has cancer." And they stop thinking about anything but being at the bedside of the child, and they don't work. Bills pile up, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're there to take care of that.
Well, fantastic work. And I'll see you up in Sawgrass. What is it, March usually, the golf tournament?
It's in May.
So we'll track you down again up there. We'll try to hit that island green on 17 in Sawgrass. I might have to use 5 or 6 balls to get there, but we'll figure that out. And as crazy as I am, out there swimming with the sharks, I heard you had a little biking accident. Little madman on the bike.
I got run over. I got run over 2 summers ago. I had my bike, and the bike is a great other day form of exercise. You know, one day you might walk, run, whatever you're able to do now. For you, it's probably swim and all that stuff. And then the next day would be bike. And so I would, you know, take off down through town. It's a great way to look at all of what's going on with all the folks. I like to ride up near the water, and I came down from the water to a main street. I looked, I didn't see anybody. Started out about a block and a half down is another turn that I'm going to go up to the water. And there's nobody around. I start to pull towards where I'm going to turn. Whew, this guy runs right through the front of my front tire. And he's in a racing attire going about, you know, probably 18, 19 miles an hour. So I try to hold it up. I can't hold it up. Down I go. You name it. I mean, 4 broken ribs, a collapsed lung, stitches in the heads. You know, my legs and arms on that one side were all screwed up. But that's not
a good thing. Don't do that.
It's not a good thing. No,
don't do that.
There's no fun. Plus, they kept me in the hospital overnight. I'm thinking, what are you doing? I don't, you know.
Well, because of the lung, we need to keep you overnight.
They can rack up the bills a little bit and collect a little more money.
It was no fun.
Anyway, I could talk all day, Coach. I just want to let you know that the combination of having you and Coach Bick there for me in my college years set up my entire life, and I thank you so much for that. And thanks so much for joining me. Love talking with you.
I could thank you, Doug. And I'm sincere when I tell you, you know, I've been most fortunate to be able to coach and be around some great players. And you certainly are right at the top of the pile. By the way, Eli told me he came and visited with you. Yeah.
Oh, we had a blast. We shot at one of his shows, and we just had a blast messing with the drop kick and everything else. And I didn't know his personality, but he had a lot of fun with it and just went along with everything. It was a blast.
He's something. I've had the pleasure of working with some great people, which has really made my life, is the guys that I've been able to coach. But I thank you for being the quality player and man and individual that you are.
I appreciate it, Coach. Thanks so much, and we'll see you soon.
Have a great day. See you, Doug.
Tom Coughlin, love him to death, and just influenced my life so much and set me on a path to get the opportunity to do what I did in college and the opportunity to continue to have a professional football career. We're going to move on to the social media world and Twitter and see what's going on out there. What do you want to talk about on Twitter?
All right, Doug. Well, obviously, big news in the college football world. Georgia wins their first national championship since 1980. One question this week, Doug. Any issue with the game not being played on Saturday night and it being played on Monday? Was that a little weird to see?
I really don't care about Saturday night to Monday night as far as a viewer. First thought that comes to mind is a full week of preparation, an extra day, extra two to prepare, and maybe guys that were nicked up could have gotten healthy. So I don't mind having a little extra window there even though Alabama ended up shorthanded with wide receivers injured and defensive backs injured and all that. But I don't have an issue with it. I like it isolated as a big day event by itself. So I think it all played out very well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Monday night, it's the national stage right after the last week, usually of the NFL season. So it's exciting to see. Takes the place of Monday Night Football, which is nice as well. Unfortunate week in the NFL. A lot of head coaches losing their jobs the past week. Minnesota, Chicago, Miami, and Denver. This question is, what do you think would be the most attractive job right now, considering what a new head coach would be stepping into?
Well, I know that the one I wouldn't want would be Chicago, because I don't think they developed Justin Fields enough this year. And I also felt like they traded away the farm to get him initially. So I think they're behind the eight ball. I was amazed that Brian Flores being let go. So I think that situation in Miami is in the best situation right now moving forward. I mean, a guy that turned, how do you go from an 0-7 to winning 7 straight? losing seven straight to winning seven. You know, obviously there's something there. And I thought he did a decent job in trying to bring Tua along that Tua developed this year and started completing a high percentage of passes, became more accurate. He was trying to work him in with Ryan Fitzpatrick a year ago, maybe before his time, but to get that going, which I don't think you saw with Justin Fields in Chicago. So I think the Miami situation at least has a shot moving forward, and that might be the best right now.
Yeah, and if you think about it with Brian Flores too, right, 1-7, they win all those games. Imagine if they made the playoffs, you know, maybe coach of the year, you know, after being down 1-7. It was a surprise that he got
right. Fired. Very possibly, you know, it was very close to having that shot to get in the playoff mix. And you're talking 1-7.
Amazing.
Playoffs? Playoffs?
The classic Jim Mora rant, one of the best rants of all time. I'll put it up there with Denny Green after they lost to the, after Arizona lost to the Bears on Monday Night Football. Another great one.
They are who we thought they
were. Exactly, exactly. And one last one here, and we'll stick with the AFC East on Twitter and Instagram. Send your questions at Doug Flutie. AFC East, the team that's close to your heart. You have two teams close to your heart, Patriots and Buffalo. But this one on the Bills, do you think this is the year they raise the Lombardi Trophy?
You know, I thought they have the – last year I thought they were going to make a run, and they didn't play well in the playoffs and get beat. I think they're talented enough. When they play well, the game they beat New England at New England – they played great. Josh Allen was on. He ran hard. He made the plays he had to win the game. That team, yes, they've been so up and down that I don't see them stringing those games together through the playoffs. Now, I'm not saying they're not good enough. They're very. I think that's my point. They're good enough to do it. It's a matter of consistency. Are they going to be consistent through this playoffs? And what team are we going to see? And that's scary. I've said it 100 times. I think Josh Allen has the potential to be that Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Weather report for Buffalo on Saturday night, single digits. So you know a little something about playing in cold weather. And we saw that right earlier this year on Monday Night Football.
I always thought that would be an advantage for Josh Allen. Big guy, big hands, can still throw the ball, strong arm, cut it through the wind. And then his running ability and physical running, I think that plays into his hands in those conditions. He did not play well the night against New England in the terrible weather and the wind and the cold and all that. And it also, the spin on that is something we talked about earlier in the podcast, dealing with conditions, taking them into mind and adjusting your game plan that you throw the analytics. I'm tired. I like to eye up a situation and react to it. And yes, you have an idea, a game plan going in. But boy, you've got to react to what the elements are. There's sometimes where you're just going to throw the ball when you have the wind at your back. But then also run as many plays as you can when the wind's at your back. Go no huddle. Hurry up. Go. When you're with wind's in your face, eat up the clock, milk it. That's when you're going for the fourth and short to try to keep the clock running. All those kinds of things all play into bad weather.
And no chance Mac Jones throws the ball less than three times, right, this time around? I mean, that's not possible, is it?
Even in a horrible conditions, the over under has to be somewhere around 14. Yeah, right.
That would be a fun. Fun spread if the weather is bad. What is Mac Jones' throws going to be?
What is the over under on Mac Jones passing? Now, does it count if it was a pass play called and he scrambled and ran? It's how many pass plays?
No, he's got to throw the ball.
How many actual throws? Okay, we're going to talk to Vegas.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that one. Again, every week at Doug Flutie, send your Twitter questions as well as send your questions on Instagram.
Thanks for your responses. Thanks for the interaction. I love it. I love talking about what you want to hear. So keep them coming, and we'll stay on top of that. And remember, you can get the Flutie Flakes cast on Apple, Pandora, and Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to rate and review. The Flutie Flakes cast is a part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Tom Kress. The associate producers are Chris Tyler and Cliff Augustin. Special thanks to SiriusXM Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen. Thanks again for listening to the Flutie Flakes cast, and join us again next week.
SiriusXM Podcasts.